Hello, this is Mike Arrington from TechCrunch. Today I have a few minutes to talk with presidential candidate John McCain about his position on a number of technology-related issues. Senator McCain, thank you for your time and welcome to TechCrunch.
I'm ready, my friend, and I'm glad. Thank you for having me on.
I'd like to start off with a broad question on technology leadership. The U.S. technology industry, of course, has been a world leader, if not the world leader, over the decades, and we've grown quite a bit through international markets. As president, what would you do to advance these efforts?
Well, I would one thing is to make sure we have free trade agreements so that every market in the world is open to our products and our innovation in which we lead the world. Obviously, education reform has to be a part of any agenda, so we have a trained and capable workforce. I continue to fight against internet taxes, and I'm glad that we just extended that ban for 7 years. We obviously
think that ban should have been permanent.
Oh yeah, I've always supported. I've in fact been the lead on making the taxes permanent. I tell you why they don't want to do it is because they want to keep coming back to you for contributions and tell you that we need to make it permanent. Same way the R&D tax credit. It's one of the great shakedowns in American history. At least getting 7 years was better than the last time when we only got 4 years. Globalization is the answer, is not something to be feared. It's something to be exploited. 95% of the world's customers are outside the United States of America. And so getting access to those markets through free trade agreements and expanded trade, adequate measures for protection of intellectual property. I understand that China violates people's intellectual property rights all the time, and I'll take them to the WTO. I'll put pressure on them to stop it. But I'll tell you, a developed Chinese economy is probably one of the best ways to where they have to respect, they want their intellectual property rights respected, is probably one of the best ways to do it. Look, you will never find anybody who comes on this blog that is more of a free trader than I am, and I think the lessons of history are that if we resort to protectionism, as we did prior to World War II and other times in America's history, we pay a very, very, very heavy price for it. And I'm worried, frankly, about the rise of protectionism in America.
You know, you mentioned China a few times there, and
yep.
The next question actually is specifically about China. Silicon Valley in particular the main topic of conversation this week is what happened with Yahoo founder Jerry Yang and also their general counsel Mike Callahan testifying before Congress, I think a subcommittee, earlier this week. I'm sure you're completely up to speed on this issue. In 2004, they turned over information about a journalist to the Chinese Internet police, which, by the way, I've heard there are like 30,000 Internet police in China. I don't have a citation for that, but it sounds crazy. The journalist was sentenced to a 10-year prison sentence. A couple of representatives compared Yahoo. I think Representative Chris Smith said Yahoo compared them to Nazi collaborators in World War II. Tom Lantos, who I think is our representative here in Silicon Valley, said morally you're pygmies. What's your opinion on this issue, specifically with what Yahoo did, but you know, more generally just with the idea of American corporations working with China in ways that perpetuate human rights violations?
Well, obviously it was an unacceptable act, and then apparently they tried to cover it up some time ago. And Yahoo is a great, great corporation, and they have contributed so much, and it's embarrassing and it's frustrating. But could I also say that part of the problem lies with China in that they have the kind of a government that remains oppressive, repressive. They select their leaders at a seaside resort in secret, and it argues for us pressing not only that Yahoo never do such a thing again, but that we have more human rights, more democracy, more progress in China itself. And by the way, as you know, Google made a deal with China where if you Google Tiananmen Square in China, you'll see a very peaceful scene. If you Google it outside of China, you'll see the young Chinaman standing in front of a tank. So Yahoo isn't the only one that's guilty here. All my message is to people in Silicon Valley and high tech and people who do business in China, you better not accede to assisting that that government from maintaining an oppressive and repressive society. It doesn't pay dividends in the long run. It harms the image of American corporations, and very frankly, is not in, it kind of confirms suspicions of some Americans that, for the sake of profit, that major corporations in America will do most anything. So, look, I regret it. I don't think it was Nazi Germany or a lot of the kind of overheated rhetoric that we have a tendency to hear at congressional hearings, but I do think it should be a shot across our bow and recognize that we just we've got to stand for what America is all about. And many years ago, when we passed a law that said we couldn't bribe foreign countries in return for doing business, everybody said, "Oh, this will level the playing field. We've got to bribe as others do." And when the fact is that we didn't have to, because we have provided the best and most advanced technology in the world.
So I'm not sure, I'm not 100% sure on your position, because you mentioned, you know, that Google also has done some things, and so has Microsoft. Skype, which is owned by eBay, reportedly helps the Chinese government monitor and censor text messages. Again, these are all allegations that have been made.
Yeah.
I don't have any evidence.
Yeah.
Cisco
yeah.
supposedly sells hardware to the Chinese government that helps them monitor the population. Do you think that that U.S. corporations should be banned from doing business with China in a way that perpetuates human rights abuses, or do you think that they should just know better on their own?
Well, one, I think they should know better. Two, the exposure that they will get sooner or later if they are doing things that are in violation of the fundamentals we believe in, then action can be taken one way or another. But like a lot of things, as you well know, it's not as simple as some would describe. For example, the so-called dual-use technology. You know, there's many products that come out of Silicon Valley that can be used for the greatest good and can
sure.
be used in the worst good, invasion of privacy, checking up on people, surveillance, and all that. So, look, I'd love to have it go black and white, but some of it is gray. But at the same time, we have to do everything in our power to maintain the integrity and of America and our commitment that all of us are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. That's all of us, including people who happen to be citizens of China. So I'm not prepared to, quote, punish these corporations yet, but I think they ought to know exactly what public reaction would be if they engage in those kinds of activities that cause abuses of human rights.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think you carry so much sort of moral authority on this issue in particular that it's good to see you have a measured response.
And
also, Yahoo's stock price dropped like 7% the day after those congressional hearings, suggesting that the society isn't going to put up with that, and they will punish companies who do business with China in this way. So,
and the other thing, you know, that happens whenever Congress passes a law, there's intended consequences and unintended consequences. One of them, a good example is Sarbanes-Oxley.
Oh yeah. That's one that we particularly don't like in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
Let's talk about net neutrality. It's probably the most important issue in Silicon Valley, and yet it rarely sort of makes its way to Washington level
yeah.
consciousness. Barack Obama recently came out saying that he would promise to make it a priority if he became president. What is your position on the net neutrality issue?
In general, I think we need to move in a different model for thinking about the FCC. I think it should focus on policing clearly anti-competitive behavior and consumer predators. But frankly, until some foul has been committed, I don't think it should be interfering in the market and probably shouldn't be trying to micromanage American business and innovation. So I have you know, this is a very tough issue, because if you look at the extremes of it, then obviously it has significant consequences. You can't restrain the market. You can't say that people can't make a living or a profit off of the internet. That obviously is not the intent of why the internet was invented and the reason why it has flourished. So what I would like to do is keep an eye on what goes on with the internet, whether people are taking unfair advantage of it, whether people are being ripped off or what, and how this thing progresses. Look, the great thing about the internet is that it has enjoyed, to a large degree, immunity from federal interference and federal regulation. So I have a tendency to say, look, let's see how this thing all turns out, rather than anticipate something that a problem that so far has not arisen in any significant way. I know that sounds a little bit equivocal, but it has a lot to do with my reluctance to use my inclination to use government intervention only when it's absolutely necessary.
I think that, you know, the pro-market approach is something I personally agree with, but in the case of internet broadband access, most consumers and businesses have very few choices, sometimes one, sometimes two, and that can sort of the cartel or monopoly approach can often sort of, even if abuse isn't occurring now, you can see it down the road as almost inevitable. That doesn't change your position on this at all, sort of taking a proactive approach to forcing companies?
What we really need to do is see what's going on now, what the leading experts in America think that are not particularly out of, some at least out of academia and others, and have hearings as to exactly what the dimensions of the problem are, what the challenges are, because very frankly, it's one of the few issues where I can see arguments on both sides, depending on which direction it actually goes. If there's clearly anti-competitive behavior and consumer predators lurking around, then, you know, I think that's pretty obvious. But I think in all due respect to those who are concerned, we have not seen very much of that yet.
Well, here's an area where we have seen some real problems, as identified, and in particular with regard to the internet as a place where people gather the information. And the government has to some extent taken a hands-off approach. There are, you know, plenty of criminal laws around this, but for some reason the problem just keeps growing. I think it's $60 billion a year just in losses for those affected. Again, an estimate, no citation for that, $6,400 per victim. Can the government do anything else to protect our privacy online, or is it just a, you know, figment of our imagination at this point?
Well, I think identity theft is a real problem, invasion of privacy. There's so many aspects of it that with increasing technology, I think one of our problems is staying up with advances in technology, which make this more and more possible. But look, and I've had personal experience. Cindy and I had our identity stolen. So the legislation...
How long did it take you to clear it up?
Not too long. It was kind of a rudimentary deal, but the perpetrators of it are now guests of the state of Arizona. But anyway, I've taken the lead on legislation that would ensure that companies have in place general data security policies. Every company that has to have security policies that deal with ID threat and would provide notice to consumers when data breaches happen. I think the best solution is continued consumer education and business innovation to try to come up with further safeguards. By the way, when that happened to me, as far as my wife and my identity theft is concerned, I was reminded of the story of the guy whose credit card was stolen but decided not to report it because the person who stole it was spending less money than his wife was. I had a similar motivation at the time.
That's pretty funny.
Anyway, good. Thanks.
H-1B visas.
Yep.
We like them here in Silicon Valley. It brings the best and brightest here. And the government, for some reason, brought back the quota to 65,000 a year the last 2 years. And I think there's demand for at least 150 or 2,000 a year. What are your feelings on H-1Bs?
I've always supported H-1B visas, and it's been a source of much-needed talent because of our lack in America of students in math, science, and engineering. But, look, I got to tell you, I got to give you some straight talk, my friend. We failed on overall immigration reform. We failed. We failed, and expansion of H-1B visas was part of it. The DREAM Act was part of it. Ag jobs. All of it failed. All of it failed because the Americans have no trust or confidence in their government. Look, here's the message I got from our failure. The Americans want the border secured. They want the border secured first. I got the lesson. And so we've got to restore the trust in government, and we've got to secure the borders. And I will continue to support H-1B visas, but I'm telling you, the American people's priority, either rightly or wrongly, and we live in a democracy, is that we secure the borders first.
But isn't the H-1B program almost collateral damage in the
sure.
to secure the borders? We're talking to people with a bachelor-level degree, educated, mm-hmm. very entrepreneurial mm-hmm. often. They come here and work for, I think, 7 years. That's a different issue than you know, illegal aliens streaming across the border. I mean, it's just completely separate issues.
Well, except that don't you think that the agricultural sector in America is an innocent bystander, too? We're going to see lettuce rot in the fields in Yuma. We're seeing almonds not being harvested in California. The agriculture sector is hurting as well. So, yes, I think they're collateral damage, and I'm sorry about it. And I worked for 3 years to try to get a comprehensive approach to immigration, which included, of course, H-1B visas and a number of other aspects of trying to get highly skilled workers into America. But I'm telling you, it was rejected. And it was rejected by the majority of the American people. We can still go on to it, but they have to be confident. They have to be confident that our borders are secure.
So you're saying the H-1B program can't be taken sort of on its own. It has to be looked at as part of the larger picture, mostly because the U.S. population demands that.
Well, we live in a democracy. I mean, and the will of the people prevails. And many times, and sometimes in our history, when the will of the people hasn't been good for America, but it's the worst form of government, only a better one hadn't been invented, Mr. Churchill said. And I want H-1B visas. I want highly skilled workers. I want all those things. But the American people are saying, and the message is, secure our borders. One, because they have no trust or confidence in government, because in 1986 we said we would secure the borders and we gave amnesty to a couple million people. And guess what? We gave the amnesty, we didn't secure the borders, and we got 12 million people who are here illegally. Now, you and I know that 40% of the people who are here illegally are unexpired, are illegal because their visas have expired. So not because they crossed the border. But I'm telling you, from the width and breadth of this country, from being involved in the most bitter debate and discussion ever been involved in on any issue in 24 years in the United States Congress, I'm telling you, people want the border secured.
So we're running out of time. So just a couple. You've given some great answers. I mean, it's very forthcoming, and I appreciate it. I guess the most important questions are still to come, though. Are you a Mac or a PC guy?
I'm illiterate.
Oh no.
Yes, illiterate.
You do have an iPod, though. You do have an iPod.
Oh yeah. I have an iPod with Golden. Beach Boys, Roy Orbison. I have a varied taste in music between very good music and not so good music, but most of my advancement and my music appreciation stopped the day I was shot down in October of 1967.
When you download music, do you do it legally through iTunes, or do you get it off of the illegal, like BitTorrent and those types of things?
No, we do it legally. If I do something illegal, I would get famous.
When you were shot down, why did that stop your love of music?
It didn't stop my love of music. It stopped my advancement in appreciation of music. I didn't hear any music for 5.5 years. Oh, I did hear some music. I heard a number of anti-war songs that I enjoyed hearing.
I saw a video of you last night that was forwarded to me that where you were telling an audience about a guard when you were imprisoned that loosened your ropes overnight
yeah.
while he was on duty, and then he drew a cross in the sand on Christmas
yeah.
Day for you, and how much that affected you. And it's actually a very touching story, and we don't have time to go into that, but I just want to tell you that as an American, I appreciate your service to this country, and I'm a big fan of yours. And
thank you. Could I make one more comment?
Of course.
I am a free trader. I will do everything in my power as President of the United States to protect intellectual property, but far more important, to open every market in the world through free trade, from the product of the most innovative, most productive, greatest exporter, greatest source of America's economy on earth, and responsible for the greatest revolution that we've experienced since the Industrial Revolution. And my job also is for, and we need for people in the community and in the high-tech community to think about this, is we're leaving a lot of workers behind. I'm in Michigan right now. We have got to design education and training programs so that people can take part in this marvelous new technology revolution that we're going through. So I enlist the help of the smartest people in America to help me in that effort to design education and training programs so that we can take care of these displaced workers, particularly as our economy kind of slows down in the next year or so.
Yeah, we didn't have time to talk about the digital divide, and it was a question I had about the E-rate program and how effective you think it is.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could speak for half an hour on that, but it's good to hear your broad point. The last question I have, though, is in protecting intellectual property rights. And this is sort of a touchy question, but does that include, putting people in jail for downloading songs?
I'm a cruel, inhumane, and indecent person in many respects, but I can't see myself doing that unless, of course, they listen to some of the abominable music that that is tops the charts today. If they do that, whether they're listening to it on an iPod or downloading it illegally, they should go to jail anyway.
I never understood a different generation's opinion on a younger generation's music until some of our interns. I listened to some of what they listened to, because I'm 37 now and these guys are 20, and I feel the same way. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I think music peaked somewhere around the time that I was in high school, and it's gone downhill since then.
It's an assault on the senses, my friend. Thanks again.
Senator McCain, thank you very much for your time.
Good to be with you.
Good luck in the race.
Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.